The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and I'm looking forward to this interview this morning. Fascinating story. It's a life after death experience. Each of us has our own relationship with our Creator, which we developed from our parents, our church experience, our community, our tradition and our culture, and our own personal experience. One of the issues all humans face is the meaning of life and death and what may happen once our bodies give out. And many parents are faced with questions from their children. My guest this week on Family First is Dean Braxton, who had a serious health crisis which led to his clinical death. Yet he did come back and has a moving story of his experience while his body had stopped working. He says many of the ideas he had adopted during his years of service as a minister and in youth training and all were changed by his experience of the absolutely unfailing love of God that he experienced. He and his wife, Marilyn, married 27 years with 6 children, now travel the world to share his experience, which has been documented by the hospital medical records. Also serving in human services for over 20 years, Dean Braxton tells his story in his book, In Heaven, Experiencing the Throne of God. Their mission is to give hope in a unique and transparent way. And I'm going to tell you a little more about Dean's background. Dean and Marilyn Braxton are licensed ministers, both serving through their By His Word Christian Center in Tacoma, Washington, and now through an independent ministry sharing his story. Dean Braxton served for 35 years as senior and assistant pastor, board member, youth leader, life skill pastor, and more at various churches. He served as a program manager for the Juvenile Drug Court and Chemical Dependency Disposition Alternative Program of King County and was a member of the senior management team for the King County Superior Juvenile Court System. He served for 20 years also for the U.S. Air Force Reserve as a Chemical Dependency, Human Relations, and Equal Opportunity Superintendent. He's helped train over 400 parents in parenting skills and given over 1,000 training presentations dealing with subjects addressing human service issues. In addition to working with youth, he's coordinated 3 prevention, treatment, family conferences, and he helped develop a number of model programs funded variously by the federal government, King County, and private industries. So with a very rich background and now a life-changing experience, welcome to Family First, Dean Braxton.
Thank you, Randy. Really appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So let's get right into your story. What took you to the hospital in the first place, Dean?
You know, it really was an unusual situation. I had little kidney stones that were acting up, and they were causing a lot of pain. And I've had them in the past about 4 years earlier, so I knew exactly what they were. And I tried to really figure out that I could go through the situation without going to the hospital, but after a while it just drove me to the hospital to go to the emergency room. And that was the main thing that got me into the hospital. The main issue was that I also had a kidney infection. And, when they were looking at the kidney stones, they said, yeah, you have a kidney infection, and we're going to give you some antibiotics, and that'll take care of it. It just happened that the mobile machine that they have that moves around in this area from hospital to hospital at that time was coming to that hospital the next day. Me and my wife talked about it, and we decided that we would go ahead and get those kidney stones blasted the next day. The doctor at the time figured that the medicine that they gave me would take care of the kidney infection, so they had no problem with scheduling me for the next day. This was like 2006, May 4th, and we were doing the operation May 5th, which was the next day. And so they gave me enough antibiotics. They figured that whole day into the evening I stayed in the hospital, so they keep on giving me those antibiotics. The next day we scheduled for me to go ahead and have this operation to blast these stones so that I could pass them much easier. You know, there were some things that weren't checked out to make sure I was ready for that procedure. And they took me in there, and they went ahead and blasted the stones. And later on, through the medical records, as you said earlier that we have, we found out what happened was when they blasted those stones, they sent that infection throughout my entire body. You know, I became what they call sepsis, I believe the medical term of it is. And that poison just entered into my bloodstream, and all my organs started shutting down.
My goodness. Just from the kidney stones, it's frightening. So then what happened?
Well, what happened after that is that, it was one of those situations that they were not expecting in the medical, in the hospital that we were at the time. They called in another doctor, Dr. Arege. I can tell you his name. Recently we were on I Survive Beyond and Back show that the Biography Channel puts out, talking about near-death experiences. And he came on there and verified everything that we've been saying, which is great, you know. But he came into the room at the time, and he says in his report, I can tell you what he says, that he looked at me and he saw me just really dying before his eyes. What was not done was no one really went back to check the records to find out what was going on. They thought we had some kind of, disease or some kind of infection that was really beyond anything that they ever seen. And so he started coming in the room without really having all the information at the time, and thinking he had it. And I don't want to say anything bad about him because he did a great job, to be honest with you.
Yes.
But he came in there and started doing the things he thought he needed to do. And one of the things they wanted to do was intubate me. And that's where they put that tube down your throat and help you breathe, because I was losing breath every moment. I couldn't catch my breath at all. I even knew at that moment that I was dying. I just knew that I was dying. And probably one of the biggest things that happened to me at that moment, when I came to realize I was dying, I didn't have any fear. And it was really something, because I always thought I would be fearful of dying or leaving this body, as I call it now. And I came to that moment of knowing I'm dying, and I believe because of my belief system in Jesus Christ that I didn't have any fear at all. And that really as I thought about it later on, and even think about it now, that was really something to me that came to that understanding that I didn't have any fear, in the sense of what I thought I was going to have fear. And the way I was dying to me was one of those situations also that I thought I would have fear over, because I almost drowned as a young kid. And I was literally doing the same thing. I was not catching any breath. I was literally suffocating. And I just remembered that I didn't have any fear at all. Well, this doctor came into the room and said, hey, we're going to get you breathing again. We're going to put this tube down your throat, put you on what, you know, the breathing machine, and let it do the breathing for you. You know, his report says that as soon as they got the tube down my throat, my heart went flatlining. And so that's when I died. And so for me, at that time, I left this body. And when I left this body, I went to be where the Father and Jesus is.
Wow. So you're, as far as they could tell, your heart had flatlined. And so how long was that clinically, that after your heart, from the time they saw the flatline to you starting to breathe again?
Well, you know, off and on during that time, they thought they were getting signs from me coming back. But the official records say that we got, say, about an hour and 45 minutes. You know, people have even asked Dr. Arege, you know, why did he keep on working on me? His comment back was that the norm is usually he'll work on someone for about 30 minutes. But
right.
Something in him just told him to keep on working on me. I give the credit to the people that were praying for me. I'll be honest with you. My wife and others, as soon as they knew that I was gone into cardiac arrest and that I had died on the table, she had called up as many people as she could, plus my children, and they all started interceding. And, you know, just by hearing the doctor's testimony, he said, no, my norm is usually 30 minutes. But he kept on working on me for the next hour and 45 minutes. He'll say about 2 hours, but the official records say hour and 45 minutes is how long my heart really stopped operating.
Yeah, that's really amazing. I mean, people who watch ER and all the medical shows now, they know that, you know, that working that long is usually beyond hope. And but so many studies these days are showing that prayers, even by people you don't even know, but especially people who you have a special relationship with, can make a difference in recovery. So that's beautiful that you had so many people praying for you. So tell us what you did experience during that time.
Well, like I said, when I came to the realization that I was dying, and I had that fear, I said it was really something, Randy, because there was this peace, this joy, all this just flooded in. And again, I'm still amazed to this day how I didn't have any fear. And I really give credit to that I had this belief system that I was going to be with Jesus and the Father. And so when I left this body, I went straight to where the Father and Jesus is. A couple of things that were happening as I was leaving. Number one is I left the hospital room and our solar system. And as I was leaving, there were these lights that were passing me by. And I came to understand that they were the prayers of people that were praying for me and others. Because it was like I was in a stream of lights for myself. You know, I even like to say they're like shooting stars. They're not really shooting stars, but that's the best way I could describe it. And yet on both sides of me, as far as I could see, were all these lights going toward heaven. And it was really amazing because these were prayers. And the most amazing thing about it is I know it just took me a little time to get there. I tell people, you know, faster than you can blink, I was there. And yet the prayers that people were praying for me and others were passing me by. And I thought, whoa, you know, like you said earlier, some of my thinking had changed. And that was one of them, that when I came to realize that our prayers don't take that long to get there, you know, because I always thought that, you know, you got to reinforce them every once in a while or try to put a rocket underneath them to get them there as quick as possible. And yet I seeing these prayers pass me by. And Randy, I came to understand it's really not so much what you say as much as how your heart is. We sometimes emphasize how to say it, when to say it, and all that stuff. And I came to understand it's just like a child. When a child's praying for a person, they don't know they don't have all the knowledge of what is going on. All they know is that they want this person better off, and it's coming from a pure heart. And I came to understand that's the way God really wants to receive our prayers, is from a pure heart. You could have all the knowledge in the world on things around prayer, but it's really, he's still looking at the heart. And all I saw was all these type of heart prayers that looked like shooting stars. I always want to emphasize they weren't shooting stars, but they looked like them. And here I am moving fast, faster than you could blink. I was there, and yet the prayers that people were praying for me and others were passing me by. And as I left this solar system, those prayers were still going past me, went into a place that was pitch dark. I know that many people say they saw the tunnel or the light and they were in this. I can understand that because there's no light there. It's pitch dark, and the only light you can see is heaven. That's the only light you can see. So as you're going toward that, for me, it wasn't so much a tunnel. It was like I was in darkness one moment, and then I went through like a window, and then I was in light. And when I got into that light, oh, man, You're talking about bright. There's nothing here on this planet that compares to the brightness that was there. And not so much it's bright that it hurts your eyes, but you see like you've never seen before because of the light that is there. There's a story my wife tells me, and when I was coming home from the hospital later on, and we live up here in the Seattle area, and on a beautiful day, you have blue skies, mountains, ranges on both sides, the Olympic Mountains and the Cascades, and we live close to the water, so you have the Puget Sound, and on a beautiful day, all of that is beautiful. But I was coming home on a day like that from the hospital, and my wife said, she looked at me, and I was squinting my eyes and looking around, and she said, "What's wrong, honey? What's wrong?" Because he thought maybe something physically was going on, or she didn't really understand, and I looked at her, and I said, "It is so dull here." And so, you know, that's the only way I could describe it. It's much brighter than you could ever imagine.
Wow. Well, I love the image of the prayers being the lights along the way.
Yeah.
And then that's certainly a brilliant way to describe the light that you experienced, that it outshone anything, any of the beautiful landscapes we have here on Earth. What happened next when you moved into that perception of the brightness of heaven?
Well, when I first enter in, you know, it's sometimes people want to know what it looks like, and I say it looks like everything that we see on this planet. The difference is nothing is dying or nothing is deteriorating. You know, I live up here in the Northwest, like I said earlier, and we have lots and lots of trees and beautiful forests up here. But the bottom line is also in those woods are a bunch of dead trees. You know, things are deteriorating around. Well, there, nothing's dying. And it's hard to imagine because of the death we have around us in the sense of things dying all the time. But there's nothing dying. So that's number one. So it surpasses anything that you can imagine in the sense of our own human thinking here because of what we see here. But there, I entered in and there were trees, there were valleys, there were rivers, there were lakes, there were mountains. All of that was there. The difference is nothing is decaying. And I can remember moving very fast. So was I flying? You know, it wasn't flying, but I was moving very fast. You know how when you go into the airport and you get on those people movers? You know,
yes.
That's what it seemed like, but I was off the ground. So it wasn't so much that I was flying. It was like I was moving on a people mover there, and I want to make sure that people understand there wasn't a people mover there, but that's the best way I could describe it. And I was going toward this forest of trees, and I can remember the trees literally moving from side to side in the sense of getting out of the way. And everything's alive there. There's nothing dead. Everything's intelligent. It can communicate. And I heard these trees on both sides saying, "He's going to see the king. He's going to see the king." And as I was moving through that motion, I got to this one area, and it opened up, and there before me was Jesus Christ. And he was facing a group of angels just all around. There were these angels, and he was looking like he was communicating with them. All I know is I went directly to him, was on my hands and knees, and I want to emphasize something here. My body was still here on this planet. It wasn't with me. It was my soul and my spirit. But I came to understand that our spirit and our soul, again, one of those areas that kind of going outside of my boxes of what I used to believe, literally fills our entire being. And it has hands, it has feet, it has legs, it has everything that we would think that you would need on this planet, but it's in spiritual form, and it doesn't have reproduction organs
okay,
at all.
Okay, Dean, we're up on a break, and this is a perfect place to stop, because when we come back, we will talk about when you presented yourself to the King in heaven.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. I'm Randy Rolfe, your host, and we're speaking with Dean Braxton, who's had an amazing life-after-death experience. He comes from a background working with the U.S. Air Force Reserve and in human services with youth programs, parenting programs, and has been a minister with his wife for a number of years. And about 5 or 6 years ago, had this amazing experience where he was actually clinically dead for over an hour and a half, and he's been sharing what that experience was. It's documented in the medical records. His doctor supports his story, and he's sharing with us the what he experienced during that time. And we just we're in heaven now. It's awesome. And you said that there's a fully energized feeling, that your body's fully there and you are kneeling, although it wasn't the body that was lying dead in the hospital. So right. Can we pick up from there and go on with the story?
Yeah. So Randy, when I got there, I went on my hands and knees, and I can remember the first words out of my mouth was, "You did this for me." And it was a kind of coming to that understanding. The only reason I was there is because of what he had done. And that is dying on the cross, you know, and paying for my sins and making a way for me to be there. You know, all I could say was, "You did this for me." And then I also came to understand another thing. None of my works got me in. I think sometimes we think we can work our way in. And I came to understand that it's all by grace. It's not by works. And the thing that got me about that was that I came to understand also, any good thing that I did was him doing it through me, because I knew my own self. And it was
yes.
Like he got the credit for it. You know, even me speaking right now, I tell people a lot of times, he's the one that's helping me to do this, you know, this presentation right now, or talk on this radio program to you. And so whatever good comes out of it, he gets it, because none of that gets me in. You know, and it's not that we don't do good things. I always tell people it's not that we don't do good things. I consider myself a Christian, and I always tell myself, "Well, you're a Christian, act like one." And there's things in the Bible that tells me this is the way I'm to act to people. So that was one of the things that really hit me hard, was looking at him and saying, "You did this for me," you know. And then the next few words that came out of my mouth, Randy, were, "Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you." And I tell people sometimes I could have said that for the next 3,000 years. Now, I say that because that's the best way to describe it for me. But there's no years there, because you're in a place where there is no time. But what I wanted to really emphasize is that I just had so much to thank him for. It seemed like to me at the moment that I got there, all of a sudden I saw all the times that he interjected in my life for something good. And it was like maybe 1% of 1% I knew out of 100%. And all I could do was see all these great things he had done for me and say thank you. And just wanted to keep on saying thank you. To the point that it seemed like my entire existence or being, my spirit, wanted to say thank you to him. And I tell people sometimes, if I would have shut up with my mouth, I would have kept on thanking him with my hands. And if I would have stopped it with my hands, I would have kept on thanking him with my feet or dancing or something. But everything about me just wanted to thank him.
That's really neat. I have a master's in theology, and did a course on Revelations. And, you know, so many people say, well, wouldn't it be kind of boring, you know, floating around singing God's praises? And you're saying, no way. You know, you just felt such passion to outpour with your gratitude forever. That's a wonderful, wonderful thought.
Yeah, it wasn't so much you're not going to be bored there. You know, I get questions all the time from people all over the places I go, and we've been around the world sharing this. And I take questions from little kids, and I love taking the questions from little kids for a number of reasons. One is they don't have a box on God, so they ask you all kinds of questions. But the other thing is they always ask it from a point of view of, is it going to be fun there? They're not going to want to go to a place that's going to be boring. And so I always tell them, no, God is the God of fun. He created fun. He knows how to have fun better than anyone.
That's a great message. It's really important that they know that the good here on earth comes directly from the good of God. So they can feel more comfortable about the whole thing. That's really neat. So I imagine the kids ask you, what did he look like?
Oh, yeah. I get that question quite a bit, not only from the kids but from everybody, because everybody wants to have a picture of what he looks like. Sometimes they ask me, does he look like the Michelangelo picture that we've gotten hanging on most of the walls around here, or does he look like this person that said they saw him, or does he look like this person that says they saw him? You know, I tell him, when I first looked at him, he was brighter than the noonday sun, and yet I could look at him. Because I was right with him, I could look at him. And I tell people, it wasn't my rightness, it was his rightness coming through me that gave me the ability to look at him. So I tell people that, first of all. Then I tell them, you know, when I, you know, focus on just him, he looked like, oh, wow, liquid crystal almost. And someone said, what do you mean by that? I said, because there were so many colors coming off of him. And the best way I could, I'm not saying he is crystal or liquid, but that's the best way I could describe it, is because of all these colors were coming off of him. You know, does he have like a human form? Yeah, I say, yes, he has a human form, you know, and it's, you know, he has his arms, the legs, the head. Did he have long hair? I said, that was hard for me to really tell because he had a crown on his head, and it seemed like the hair was weaved around some of the crown. I can't tell you how long it was. They said, well, how tall he was? I said, I don't know. I wanted to say he was 6'2", 6'3", but I'm not really sure, because I was on my hands and knees most of the time, and so I was looking up at him. They asked me what color he is, and all I could keep on going back and telling people about that. The color that we think he is much more beautiful than you could ever imagine. It's not a white or a brown skin, you know. It's a color that represents all of us.
That's neat. So it's not just a pure white. It's all that variety of brilliance that the sun gives us, but more.
It is.
What I know, the theologians for millennia have wanted to see God. I mean, that was the ultimate thing, was to be in the presence of God, to see the face of God. I mean, mm-hmm. They've said that so many times. And so when you think of in your heart of hearts, why do you think you were given this particular privilege, if I can ask, Dean?
Well, I don't know if it's just a privilege. I really believe anyone that has that relationship with Jesus will have the same kind of access as I want to say. Will they see it just like I do? I don't know. I can't tell you that because it's so personal. But I can tell you this, that I looked at if you want to say a privilege given to me, the day that I came to that understanding of Jesus Christ in my life. That's when I really believed that was offered to me in the sense of me having that ability to be able to see him. Now, leaving this body was one of the promises. I go to the Bible and I read in a book called John, the 14th chapter, 1-6, as you probably, it says, you know, he says, I go to prepare a place for you in my Father's house of many mansions. I look at that as a promise that's given to everyone that has that type of relationship with Jesus, that whether you leave this planet, you know, on accident, whether you leave on time, whether it's a terrible death, whether it's a peaceful death, doesn't matter. You get the privilege, as you say, to go like I did to where the Father and Jesus is because of what he had done. And that's the way I really looked at it as, you know, and I didn't want to come back, Randy, okay?
Yeah, that was my next question, because the idea of what I meant by privilege was that you actually experienced it and came back to this life, and that is very rare, as you know. And so I was wondering, you know, so tell me about that, how and why you did come back to your body.
Well, when I got there, he looked at me and he said, "No, it's not your time. Go back." And I really believe because of the prayers that people prayed on this side and him together, that came to beings. Why it came, I can't give you the full understanding. All I can tell you, it did come. The other thing I can tell you, though, is this. I didn't want to come back. I wanted to stay. Even telling you now and expressing this to you, even though I have a smile on my face and I'm joyful, I'll be honest with you, I did not want to come back. Everything was right there. It was past peace. There was nothing to be peaceful from. And it's hard for us to understand that because we have so many things on this planet that we're, you know, even the best life we could have on this planet, there's still things you want pieces from. You know, I think about the people that, you know, we always sometimes say, well, if we had that much money, we'd be happy. And then the people that have that much money, they're seeking something else. And there, no one's seeking anything else because it's past peace. Everything is right. You get along with everyone. When I worked in the court system, I had about 35 different judges that I reported to because of the job I had. Every one of them had an agenda. It was my job to try to figure out their agenda. Okay. And when I was there, I remember there was no agendas. There was only one, and that was God's agenda. And so, I didn't want to come back. I did not want to be back on this planet at all. But he said to me, and really had to tell me 3 times, "No, it's not your time. Go back."
3 times. Wow. I know right now, Dean, I'm writing a book for mothers of my generation who are losing their mothers. And one of the things I say in that book is that I've always imagined my mother and father being in a perfect place where they have perfect clarity and they have joy and laughter about the troubles we have down here. And it sounds like that's kind of what you're describing.
Yes, yes. It's joy, unspeakable joy. You know, I tell people I was becoming his love. Some people say, "Well, didn't you love your family? Didn't you love your wife and your children?" I said, "Yes, I had more love there than you could ever imagine. There was nothing interrupting it or getting in the way for it. But I was always also thinking, you come here where everything is right, where everything is peaceful, where everyone gets along. You know, I travel this world and there's things I see, and my wife is not always with me. And I think, man, it would have been nice for her to be here to see this." And so that's what I was, you know, experiencing there, is that, you know, there's no death there. No one's dying. You know, I don't think we have a concept of being in a place where nothing is dying at all.
That's powerful. And I know when we spoke before, you talked about there being no separation. People say, well, there were some people that had died, and then there were people you left on Earth. And you had said there was no sense of separation between your loved ones here and those that had preceded you into heaven.
Yeah, it was, you know, that was one of the, this is a family program that you do, and I was hoping we'd get into that piece there, because that was one of the most significant parts of having this experience, is to be able to see my family that went on before me. Some of them I knew, Randy. Some of them I never met when I was on this planet. And yet when I got there, I remember looking past Jesus, and on the other side of him was my grandmother Mary and several other relatives that were people that I knew that had, some of them I knew, some of them I didn't know, had made that commitment with God. And they were there, and they were shiny. They had a big smile, and they had pure joy. And they came to greet me in. And it was generation after generation after generation after generation that had that connection with God that literally came to greet me in. And it was like, whoa, I didn't know that this would happen. And it also put a sense inside of me of how important family is to God. You know, if you read, you know, like you have that background in theology, well, now I can't even say the word.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you have that background in the scriptures in the Bible. And, you know, in Genesis 1 and 2, sometimes we forget that family was really put together in the first part of the Bible, the first two chapters. You know, before that commitment that Adam made, where he decided not to do what God wanted him to do, which we call sin. But before that, family was put together. And it was always God's plan that family would be together for eternity. And so when I got there, I came to realize he had not changed it. That was not something that he wiped away and said, no, we're not going to do it. And for years, I had thought, maybe you might know your family when you get there. You might be able to recognize them. And when I got there and I saw my family there, oh, man, it just changed, you know, how I think about my family, you know, how I think about other people's families, how important family is. And I know sometimes when I say that, some people say, you don't know my family. You don't know. I don't always want to be with my family. But when you're there, all those things that are so negative here that we have around family or even people are gone. They're not there. You get along, you know. You know, it's just a whole different aspect of understanding how important family is. To the point, Randy, I think you heard this. My grandmother Mary, which is the one I really give the credit for helping me to have that direction for God in my life. She looked at me and she said, "Bring as many of us back with you as you can." She was emphasizing that she wanted every one of our family members to be there with them for eternity.
Oh, that's beautiful. We're coming up on a break, but I'm just going to ask you a, you know, devil's advocate kind of question. What about scientists who will say, well, this is the kind of thing the brain goes through. You had a strong belief already, and it just, that white light is what the brain does when it's dying, and you just saw what you wanted to see. What do you say to those folks?
Well, one of the things that, you know, I've heard that before, I came
sure.
back with a lot more knowledge than I had when I left. There's things I know now that I didn't know beforehand. I have an understanding of spiritual things like never before in my life. And so for me, that was one of the biggest things that had changed. Other people that are theologians that I've talked to over the time frame, and they'll ask me questions. One guy said to me one time, he said, "Unless you have sat down and been reading books for the last 20 or 30 years, there's no way you should know the answers to all these questions that people ask you." You know, I know things like I've never known things before. I have no fear of dying at all. And if it was just a moment of going into my brain, then, you know, praise God. But the bottom line is, I know I left this body. I know I left because I left and went there, and then coming back. I remember coming back here and going through everything and seeing the people run around in the hospital room. And
well,
I
let's stop here, Dean, and talk about what happened when you came back. We're up on our break, and I want to ask you about what condition was your body in when you rejoined it, and what it's meant to you since then. So. Stay tuned, please, listeners.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe. I want to make a couple of quick announcements. I want to thank all our listeners. We're up to 68,000 listeners a month and growing. And I'm currently finishing up a book called Mothers Losing Mothers, which is very apropos for our topic today, to have hope and peace around your loved ones who have passed on before. We're talking with Dean Braxton about his life after death experience, and he's shared with us how it felt to be in heaven, and about his previous family, many of which were previous generations he hadn't even met, and that he came back with a much deeper knowledge that he couldn't have gotten any other way about what the universe has to offer, the love of God and the absolute peace. And so, Dean, I wanted to ask you, before we talk about, you know, what happened when you came back to your body, I wanted to ask, that knowledge, did you feel, was it a sudden awakening, or did you just come back with an awareness that was new?
I came back with an awareness that was new. And that was a adjustment in itself. Because it wasn't just in the sense of knowledge around the spiritual aspect of my own life or other things, but it changed the way I looked at people, and it changed the way I looked at how I operate on this planet. Even saying that, it's no longer how I operate here on Earth, it's how I operate here on this planet. Things changed in even my vocabulary of how I say things. My wife, if she was on here, could probably give you more of a detail, because she said, I was different. I was just different. One of the things I had to do that most people don't think about when you go through these type of situations, but because of my counseling background and how what I was doing for a career at the time, I had to grieve my own death. I had to go through the grieving process, even with my own death, of going and coming back. And that was, you know, there's no one you sit down with and you try to find out who can help you do this. And one of the things that did help me is the current pastor of the church I attend and the associate pastor. I would take off every Tuesday afternoon and go sit down with them and just talk about these situations. But when it comes to that knowledge, I just had a whole bunch of knowledge. And I thought, I will never fit in again. I will never be able to relate to anybody, you know, because, you know, how do you talk about this to people?
Yeah, so that you almost felt lonely at first. So sharing with others and taking on this ministry helped you with that sense that you...
Well, it gave me a direction. That's the best way of saying it. You know, we use the word journey a lot in our field. You know that. And so it's the journey that I'm on right now. You know, I see myself as going back. I know I will leave this body again. And I am very hopeful that I will never return again. And someone say, why? Because it's everything's right there. It's peaceful. And it's past anything that you could ever imagine here. And so, but I do see myself on a journey of heading back in that direction. Even talking on this radio program right now is part of that process of me heading in that direction. I need to fulfill the things I believe that I'm supposed to do here. Do I know them all? No. All I have to do is take one step at a time heading in that direction.
Cool. So you do have such a history in human services and especially helping in the juvenile court system in King County and with the alternative programs for offenders. And so what new insights do you bring to that work? Because you said when you're on tour and during the break, you said that when you're on tour sharing your story, you try to hook up with local agencies and organizations that are helping people deal with addiction and drug dependency. What special insight do you bring now to that?
Well, in the sense of talking to the people that are going through those situations, I always had a compassion for that direction. I didn't grow up in a drug and alcohol home or, abusive home. My parents were very loving parents to me. I grew up in, a very special environment with the two that raised me and really appreciate that. But I also grew up with people that love people. And so my father, you know, Randy, as you met him before, he loves people. And so we grew up with that type of aspect. What this did for me was break down some of the barriers I put or the judgments that I had for people that really, some of them I knew, some of them I didn't know, you know, and in the aspect of God loves them all. And sometimes what we do is we'll think he loves one person more than another. I came to understand that everyone literally has a love that's created just for them and that you may think that God has this blanket love, like, oh, I got all this love for everybody. And yet I came to understand when I was there, he creates individual love for each and every person on this planet. So for him, every person on this planet is number one to him. And I know people say that, but when you come to understand he even creates the love for them, just for them, it's tailor-made for them, then when you go to react with that person, you're understanding that if you can be literally used as a tool by him to portray that individual love that he's created for that person, you can be more effective in reaching that person because that person literally was made to receive that love. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, that seems very powerful because you're empowered and living in the confidence of that personalized love. And then when you're speaking to someone who's maybe had a troubled past, you know that they also have that available, that uniquely theirs personal love. That's a wonderful, wonderful tool to be able to share.
In our field, Randy, you know this, that we kind of go off behaviors and we say, 80% of the people act this way, so we treat 100% the way that 80% of the people act. And if we could look at it in the sense that everybody is an individual, even when I was in the mental health field and we would give out medication, everybody really reacted to that medication differently. That's how individual they are. And so it's looking at people as more individuals instead of groups. And that had really changed with me in the sense that we can't group everybody together and say, okay, this is the way we're going to react with everybody, so everybody's going to react the same way. When you find out individually that people react different because of who, how they're made, and if you can be a part of God's love, literally, being given to that person that's being created just for that person, you'll have results that are really much more than you could ever imagine. To me, it's just like a parent that has children. You know, every child is different, and as you show the love that you have for that child in a different way to each one, sometimes they say it's not fair, but in reality, you're treating the child here the way that you believe that they need to receive the love that you have for them, different than the child that you are treating in a different way, because they have different love that you have to give them. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it certainly does. Certainly in parenting, sometimes parents do make the mistake of trying to treat each child exactly the same. But what you really want to do to treat them equally, you must address their individual needs.
Yeah.
And that's what you're saying, that God and Jesus tailor make the love to to that person, and that's, I love that analogy, because that's what works best in parenting. And it doesn't mean you have to give everyone the same gift for Christmas, so to speak. Mm-hmm. It's more of addressing their particular way of receiving your parental love. So that's a very powerful image, which has been used forever as far as God being the universal parent,
but
in a good way, not the cookie cutter fashion.
I got three brothers, and my parents literally have to, and even now I see how they, when I go down and visit them, you know, they address us all differently. They approach us differently. And that's their way of showing each and every one of us how they love us. Now, we're more mature now, and so we don't get to why you're doing it that way with that one, or why you're doing it that way with that one. We come to the understanding, because we have our own children, that that's how literally they are showing us. I don't expect them to show me the same way that they show my brother Louis, which is my older brother. You know, I don't expect them to show me the same way they show my younger brother Anthony, or my other brother Gerald, which is younger than me. But I do understand that when they're showing me how they love me, literally it's like it was made just for me. And I came to understand that's how God operates with every human being on this planet.
Oh, that's so cool. So we just have a few more minutes. I want to ask when you came back to your body, as a medical question again, what did that feel like, and how was your body?
You know, when I first came back to my body, I still had to end up in the hospital. My wife suffered nine more days, and I was in ICU nine more days because that poison was still going through my body. They didn't expect me to make it. The doctor, Dr. Arege, you know, they said it was poor. They didn't really not think I would make it even after that, even though I came back. They had me on the life support machine still. They had me on the kidney dialysis machine 24/7 because my kidneys had shut down, and they had lots of medication. When I look at the medical records, 29 different things were going wrong with this body. The miraculous thing about it is this, that I was totally healed, and I have no residual effects from it. I am not lingering from anything that happened at that time. You know, I had a massive heart attack. They figured that I should be taking all these medications to keep on going. I don't take anything because when they did the test on me for the next 3 months, they couldn't find anything wrong with me. So I was totally healed. That's another part of the story that we talk about. It's just the total heal that took place after that. I stayed home for about a month and a half after this happened, then went back to work for a half, you know, days for about a month, and then went full time right after that.
And I'll have to say, having met you, that you look like the picture of health.
Yeah.
So how can people learn more about your wonderful book and your work, and maybe have you come to their community to share?
Well, they can go to deanbraxton.com. That's a website that we have, and it gives you more information on how to contact us. You can also, the book is available through Amazon.com, Border Books, you know, the normal places out there in bookstores and things like that. It's called In Heaven, Experiencing the Throne of God. My wife has one also called Pressing In, A Woman's Stand, that tells what she went through during that same process. So those two books complement each other. But they can go to DeanBraxton.com, and they can find out, you know, all the information there.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, it's an amazing story, and it certainly gives a lot of hope and comfort for the future, as well as those we've lost in the past, and also some guidance of how parents can share with their children that it's beautiful and it's going to get even more beautiful. And I so appreciate you being a guest on Family First, Dean, and good luck with your mission and your ministry. And it's a great story. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Great. Give my best to your whole family.
I will.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.